If you're going to buy GameStop, go ahead, but there's no way that that is a better purchase than buying Bitcoin and putting it into a cold storage wallet.
Like, we've really kicked the can down the road, because now we don't have a sovereign debt crisis, but we have the exact same problem and these same inflationary forces that are impacting people all over the world.
You know, the government doesn't need to buy Bitcoin. It can print money. As Bitcoiners, we really don't want the state to get more powerful, which is what Bitcoin will make it do.
If we have a debt problem, we have a spending problem, and that's really it. And Doge is not going to cut, they're not going to close a $2 trillion deficit, right?
I think if Bitcoin hit 500,000 tomorrow, you would see a ton of people wanting to purchase it because they're afraid of missing out, but also they're thinking it's going to go from 500 to 750 to a million in short order.
Hey there, Michael here with the Bitcoin Way podcast. I appreciate you tuning in. Today on the show, I've got Greer Hall, who is best known for his bird flip line of apparel. Awesome stuff that I think many Bitcoiners would love. And we cover everything. We talk about the Strategic Bitcoin Reserve, the Bitcoin Act, stablecoins, hyper-Bitcoinization, Michael Saylor, GameStop, you name it. A lot of hot takes in this episode. I really think you're going to enjoy this one. Hey, everyone. Like I said in the intro, I've got Greer. Greer, welcome to the Bitcoin Way podcast.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, man. I'm looking forward to this conversation. We're going to dive right into all the hot topics. I think you and I are going to see eye to eye on many things, but I think these will just be fun things to bat around. I want to begin with GameStop because that's the big news this week, issuing debt to buy Bitcoin. And they've, by the way, they've got, I think, a little over $4 billion in cash that they could be using. But I guess when you can take out a loan at 0% interest, you're going to do that. What is your, the opinions abound, I think, on GameStop, institutional adoption, all this stuff. What is your thought on what's happening with GameStop?
I was disappointed when I heard they were going to raise debt and use a Saylor strategy to buy Bitcoin. They've got $4 billion that they could deploy. There's no business model that they've communicated. Like, are they going to revamp the store? Are they going to shut down the stores? Are they going to reintroduce new technologies? Like, what's happening with the company? Those, to me, those details don't even matter anymore. So I was hoping that they would take, a quarter or half of that cash pile they're sitting on and say, we are going to buy as much Bitcoin as we can over the course of the year. I think that would be exciting. That's what I think if a company's going to get into it, you should do it transparently. And I think buy as much as possible. You know, I was disappointed with the fact that they're gonna borrow debt and then issue more shares as a stock, issue more stocks and allow, the market essentially to purchase their Bitcoin on their behalf. To me, mm-hmm. It's just like line up to the sucker's table. You know, if you're gonna buy GameStop, go ahead. But there's no way that that is a better purchase than buying Bitcoin and putting it into a cold storage wallet. So I wasn't impressed. I think it's great that there are more people talking about Bitcoin, but the way that they're going about it, I think, is super lame.
Yeah, it's interesting. Like, I understand if someone would give me a loan for 0% and I had the cash flow to cover that and I had cash and reserves that I'm unconcerned about being able to pay off the principal in the future. I understand from like Ryan Cohen's perspective, why they might do that. I don't understand why anyone would make that purchase. Like, why would there be anyone on the other side of the table? And it seems it's a matter of greed, right? Like, I think maybe GameStop could double the performance of Bitcoin. I could go through a list for 15 minutes of all the counterparty risk you're taking on. Custodial, operational, cyber, like there's so many. Do you sympathize, I guess, with the leadership team at, I think I agree with you just at face value. Do you understand or sympathize with the leadership team why they would take on debt versus just using, if they know that people are going to give them free money effectively?
Yeah, I think you're right. It's greed and, more power to them. I it's not that I'm saying they shouldn't do what they're doing. I just don't think it's a very strong move. You know, if they're sitting on a pile of $4 billion, that money is going to lose its purchasing power over time. So you might as well take the money that you have on hand, convert a portion of that into Bitcoin, You know, now you've at least demonstrated that you're committed to it, that you're preserving your purchasing power as a company. I see it as a way to buy time. If you need to figure out how do we make GameStop a different company, you know, I think the first thing you do is stop the bleeding from your fiat dollars, or if you're invested in treasuries, however they're storing that money. I would put that in as much as possible, as well as responsible, put that into Bitcoin and leave it there. And then if you're going to go do a debt round and raise more money at 0%, sure. I mean, you could argue that you'd be an idiot not to. But what they're trying to do is, you know, preserve their purchasing power and grow it over time and become a bigger company. I don't see how having less Bitcoin gets you there. You know, if you've got a big fat stash of cash, convert that right now and then go do the debt round.
Yeah. We've got a biweekly show that we do on this channel called Bitcoin Banter, where me and a couple of the guys on our team talk about the news. So you can imagine this morning we were recording talking about GameStop, and I made the observation that maybe for some people they have like a long-term thesis on this, right? Like they see what Saylor has done and they think, well, maybe in 10, 20 years, you know, like it or not, there are going to be Bitcoin banks because many people are going to want someone else to custody their Bitcoin for them, or have, you know, fiat services stacked on top of Bitcoin or whatever. And so they anticipate, you know, MicroStrategy and now maybe GameStop being like the next JP Morgan or something. And one of our guys, Rick, said, Michael, I think you're giving people a lot more credit than they deserve. Most people are just smash buying GameStop on Hopium. And I'm curious suppose I'm probably wrong. You're nodding your head. So let's say I'm maybe giving people too much credit. Do you potentially see, though, a long-term play with companies like GameStop and MicroStrategy, where in the future they could be incredibly influential companies, and because of that, you get in early with them, like, you know, you have an opportunity to outpace Bitcoin, or still just greed and too much counterparty risk and kind of silly fiat games?
Yeah, I don't see, you know, GameStop becoming a bank per se. I think that GameStop is going to squeeze the onion as long as possible to extract as much value from GameStop the brand. So I can see GameStop the brand living for 20 or 50 or 100 years. And that at the same time, the Bitcoin that they purchase over time will allow them to purchase other companies or go into different avenues. And, you know, there could be a bank that they've started using the capital from purchasing Bitcoin. So I could see it. I feel like it gets really nuanced. I think right now the smartest thing for anyone to do is to purchase as much Bitcoin as you can over the next 10 years, you know, the Saylor thesis. We're kind of in the gold rush. So if you're going to really think about, you know, this is a game, it's like acquire as much Bitcoin as possible. If it becomes a bank, or if Strategy becomes a bank, you know, I would say we would probably, at that point, we're seeing a lot of people who need Bitcoin and can't use a dollar or a stable coin or something like that. So I think that's probably looking a little too far down the road. Sure, there will be Bitcoin banks in the future. They'll probably, you know, fractional reserve Bitcoin, where, you know, a certain number is held and then it's lent out. I just don't think we're going to escape the dollar system as much as I want to. I don't think we're quite at the Bitcoin is a bank stage yet. I think we're still in this, and we will be in, you know, for the next 10 years. Just a sort of a hoard as much as possible mentality. And then sort of once the dust settles, it's like, okay, now that all the Bitcoin is divvied up, what can I acquire to make my footprint bigger and to get the leverage that I need? So yeah, it's part of the reason I was kind of not impressed with GameStop's announcement. It just seems contrary. If the goal is to get as much Bitcoin as possible, why not just do it?
Yeah, just smash by. Yeah, that's certainly an opportunity that seems to be available to them. I mean, what do you think about this institutional adoption more generally? To me, it's been interesting. I've only been in Bitcoin a few years, and I think I feel the way that I I hear people talking about, like, back in 2013, they thought like hyper-Bitcoinization was coming in 2014, like, you know, the next year. And I've been surprised, even though I hear those voices talking, that it's kind of been MicroStrategy for a long time. And now finally there's another one. It's El Salvador, and there's, one or two other countries kind of play. Yeah. But do you think we're going to start seeing a lot more of this? Do you anticipate an uptick? And do you think that, whether you like the mechanism by which they accumulate the Bitcoin, do you think that is a net positive, though, that at least it's private companies come in? And we'll get to the strategic reserve and government adoption here in a bit.
I think it's good. I mean, I think that there's plenty of Bitcoin to go around. So, we're talking as plebs, like, get to 0.1 or get to a full Bitcoin. In my opinion, that's a monstrous amount. That's a huge amount. And, today, 0.1 Bitcoin is, a little over $8,000. It's not that much money, but I just think that we don't know what the next 10 years look like. So if you're working for a company and they acquire Bitcoin as an employee, I think you feel comfortable knowing the direction of this company is going to be positive. I can continue to work here and make an impact. So I think from an employee perspective, it's great. Saylor has shown us that you can have a dying company or a company that's competing with Microsoft, and you can purchase Bitcoin and then be autonomous. It no longer matters who your competitors are. So I think that they've shown that, yes, it is a key to success. It's a key to driving capital. So I'm not opposed to any entity like a company buying Bitcoin. I think that it's almost like it's even though it's 15 years old, it's still so new that who cares, what it'll be worth in the future. Just get some now so you can have a piece. I think we're watching that play out in slow motion. I think that Bitcoin can save a dying company, but I think if you are, let's just say, a run-of-the-mill company that provides services or software, and you acquire Bitcoin and hold it on your balance sheet, we now know that that's a net positive for your business based on the accounting rules that have changed. I just don't see it as a lose-lose. If you look at the Bitcoin distribution, there's only like 7% remaining that is not in the hands of individuals, right? Most of Bitcoin, 57% or something like that, is held by people. Over the last year, as Bitcoin went up to 100, a lot of those people have sold. And I think we're seeing like the market absorb what a lot of those large holders are willing to part with, probably to improve their lives. So I think the hardest part about Bitcoin is not that the company gets it, but it's that your enemy gets it. The person that you don't like starts buying Bitcoin. That to me is, I would say, like, when it comes to psychology, that's the hardest part, because now your enemy not only shares the same values as you to some extent, but you're on the same level playing field as they are. People say Bitcoin's for enemies, but for me, that is a really bitter pill to swallow.
Yeah. It's interesting, though. And one of the things I just have to learn and kind of stomach is that any sort of major news takes Bitcoin the opposite direction of what I would expect. And like we've talked about on our Bitcoin banter before, that Russia's accepting cryptocurrency, probably specifically Bitcoin, because I think they've maybe done a little bit of research for like trade, international trade and to bypass sanctions. Great use case, by the way, for anyone who's looking for tips. It's fascinating to me that there seems to be like some of those catalysts for like the game theory to really kick off already seem to be to have happened, certainly a lot in motion. And, we're still seeing, the strategic Bitcoin reserve, maybe in the next 90 days or 6 months, we'll see a lot of action around there. It still feels like it's moving a lot slower than I would have anticipated. I don't know if you have any thoughts on that. I want to come back to Saylor too, because I want to hear your general take on him, because I think he's become sort of a lightning rod for controversy in Bitcoin.
Oh yeah.
But when it comes to this sort of the game theory you're referring to, what is it that you think is holding back? And so maybe, I don't care that much about the price, but like, why is the price still relatively suppressed when we have what seemed to me at least to be so many bullish indicators, even geopolitically.
Yeah, my thought, and I'm not an expert here, but you know, so take it or leave it. But my thought is we're not seeing a lot of spot Bitcoin purchase. When you're talking about a, you know, like the SBR, you know, for the US, or you're talking about a country, I think that we're seeing more activity in mining. And I think rather than countries say, I'm going to go out and purchase on the spot market with whatever entity or exchange they're going to use, I think that they're going to first plug in miners and compete that way. You know, the hash rate is at an all-time high. And I think the second way is that they're going to be using over-the-counter, the trade desks. Every exchange practically has a trade desk. I don't think it would be that difficult for a country's representative or some finance minister to have a relationship with a large exchange and say, you know, we're going to funnel a certain amount of money to you and we want Bitcoin in return and we want you to hold it for us. To me, that seems like a very simple way for a country to adopt Bitcoin without the market knowing. And I do think that's happening. The price feels like it's suppressed because of the good news. But I also think that we're looking at the spot market and there don't seem to be a lot of buyers. You know, you see people opening up short positions and long positions, and it appears to me that the exchanges are just sort of oscillating between those traders and just liquidating them as the day goes on. And I think that, you know, this for us, for a pleb, I consider myself a pleb, you know, I get really bored with the price action. It's exciting a couple days out of the year. And if you focus on it every day, and of course, I mean, I check the price probably 100 times a day. It can really dictate your emotions. So I just don't think that it's playing out the way as simple as we want it to. I think there's probably a lot more going on behind the scenes and that isn't playing in the market, but I'm confident that the people who truly want Bitcoin are able to get it. You know, if you think about the Kingdom of Bhutan, you know, they've been mining Bitcoin for years and selling it. They'll sell 100 million Bitcoin to fund their services. So they've really just kind of attached to it as a way to generate revenue. We had no idea that was happening until that news came out. So I just think that we want things to be really cut and dried and simple. You know, like news article comes out, Bitcoin goes up. And most of that, I think, is from the feeling of I've invested so much of my time and energy and finances. I want all the people around me to see that I was smart and to stop thinking that I'm some crazy person. And so I struggle with that too, but I think that that's probably the root of most of our frustration. It's like, we're just impatient.
Yeah, no, I agree with that. And I noticed that even more with like listening to other podcasts and, you know, part of my job is just staying attuned to what's going on. And I feel like sometimes I feel like banging my head against the wall because the question is just always like, well, when are we going to go up? Like, I want to buy my house. I want to, you know, and it's like, you know, Bitcoin is a beautiful thing, but you would have never had that expectation of investing in the stock market or, you know, and I view Bitcoin as the money of the future, not as an investment, to be clear. I think these people view it as an investment and for some reason they have like this expectation of what it's supposed to do on their terms. And it begins to make the content creation space just unlistenable. Like and that's part of the reason I wanted to talk with you is because I didn't feel like you shared that sentiment. Do you think though, when it comes in terms of like price, do you think there's a lot of like paper Bitcoin out there? You know, like does Coinbase have everything that they're selling? Are we gonna have another FTX kind of blow up or something?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I don't think that maybe. I think it would be probably silly to say there's no paper Bitcoin. I think if you know, if everyone withdrew their Bitcoin, we'd see that the exchanges have a lot less. BlockFi was rehypothecating, I believe. Lots of exchanges were kind of giving you yield based on you leaving your Bitcoin with them. So I think there probably was. But I also feel like there's no need for paper Bitcoin right now because Bitcoin is so available. Now, you know, they could definitely be engaged in this, but you know, the supply shock, there's not going to be any Bitcoin left.
Like, I think we will hit that, but I think, unfortunately, it's going to take a lot longer than people realize. And what tells me that is when you look back at the last year, there has been so much selling. There's been so much Bitcoin that has been sold from people who held it a long time. And I think as we go up, we're going to continue to find people that say, I've held it for 6 months, or I've held it for a year, or I've held it for 2 years, I'm finally cashing out, and I'll get back in, or they're taking a portion. I just think we're going to meet sellers completely along the way. You know, the elements for MicroStrategy and GameStop and the U.S. government and the Russians and the Chinese, let's say they all go in and, you know, I think there's 3.6 million Bitcoin on exchanges. Let's just say they scoop it up. It would take, I don't know, something like $300 billion, and it all goes away like in the blink of an eye, or just hypothetically at the same time. Then I think, yes, there's no Bitcoin for sale. Prices at the market, and it could be in the millions of dollars. But I just don't see that happening immediately. I think we have a longer road ahead of us. It could happen overnight, but I think that, you know, the best thing is to prepare for sort of a boring Bitcoin market, but look at it the way I do is like, I buy Bitcoin every week, $20, $100, whatever I have that's not going somewhere else. And I'll just keep stacking over the course of my life. There isn't a number that I want to hit. I just want to always have more Bitcoin than I did the day and the week before. And I think in 10 years, I'll be glad I did that.
I completely agree with that. I think people overthink it. And like, I think having a stacking goal in certain scenarios may be helpful, or psychologically, it helps you kind of stretch and, you know, think about how can I cut costs that I really don't need or whatever. But yeah, my biggest goal at the end of each year is that I have more Bitcoin now than when I started the year. And I don't sell it. I spend it if I can and am given the opportunity. And I need to get better at looking for opportunities to spend my Bitcoin and replace, because I think we'll also talk about the digital gold narrative here in a few. But I think it's important that people are using it as money, as currency. And, you know, it is a savings vehicle is one important way. But it's not the only way. Yeah, why don't you give me your thoughts on Michael Saylor generally? So I've only been around a couple of years, but I remember hearing about him, you know, 2 years ago and learning a lot. I loved his analogies. I mean, he's obviously a very smart guy. He's wealthy already, and he's going to be even more wealthy in the future. But his talk track, I think, seems to have shifted in some ways subtle and other ways not. I think calling out paranoid crypto anarchists was an interesting step in a very different direction. The digital capital narrative, why don't you just lay it out? Like, what do you think of Saylor? What do you think of what he's doing? And are you happy, disappointed, or something else?
Yeah, I think I give Saylor all the credit he deserves. You know, I mean, he's very smart. He's a genius. I think that he deserves a lot of the praise that he gets being a pioneer. He's definitely gone through sort of the lunatic phase, and he looks really smart, and he is smart. So I think, you know, those are all great things. I don't think we should worship anyone, and I don't think sailors necessarily should be your hero. But I think in terms of a story of someone who was fighting against the system, was losing, and then discovered Bitcoin and found they could win, that's a universal story. I share that story. I'm not nearly as successful as Saylor. It goes without saying, but Bitcoin has helped me win in a lot of ways. And I can look back on my life and where I am now, and I can see the trajectory. And I feel very optimistic about the future because of Bitcoin. So I would say he deserves a lot of credit. But I think that it's fair to point out that he doesn't like self-custody. You know, he stores his personal stack, from what I understand, with Coinbase. And then MicroStrategy uses Coinbase and Fidelity to store their Bitcoin. And I love Bitcoin because I don't have to ask either of those entities for permission. I can move my funds whenever I want, and I can, you know, I can save them and store them how I choose. And I believe he's missing out on one of the huge benefits that Bitcoin offers. And yes, he's at this institutional level, so maybe he doesn't want to have $1 billion worth of Bitcoin on a hardware wallet. But I also know that a lot of those companies like BitGo, the largest ones, they just use ledgers and trezors, and they use hardware wallets to store funds. So I think it's fair to criticize the fact that he's missing out on one of the key reasons to get into Bitcoin in the first place, which is, you know, the banks fail, the banks lie to you. He's talked about how his money in Argentina, you know, was devalued by 50% overnight. Coinbase is like a bank for his crypto, for his Bitcoin. So I think that he deserves a lot of the criticism for that. You know, I wouldn't criticize him all day long, but I think he's missing the huge piece. And the other sort of piece I would say is, I kind of share Saifedean's idea that we live in a dollar-free world at some point, or Bitcoin becomes, you know, the reserve currency of the world. And I think it's been really tough to see Saylor and the United States government and the new administration really support stablecoins. You know, in my opinion, that is the future central bank digital CBDC that we were afraid of. And I don't see the dollar going away. And I just see Bitcoin and the dollar living next to each other, which to me is, you know, not what we had in mind.
Yeah, I agree. I think that's particularly concerning for me. I concede that there's going to be a period of time. I mean, short of just the dollar completely imploding and we have no alternative but to move to a Bitcoin standard, I anticipate some rather long period of time. I don't know if that's 10 years or many decades, where the dollar will live side by side with Bitcoin. I think Bitcoin fails in sort of the ultimate sense that, or at least based on what I want Bitcoin to be. Again, people have different notions of what Bitcoin is and what it should be. If it doesn't ultimately someday completely replace and upend all fiat currencies, I think, you know, tying the dollar to Bitcoin is a much more shallow victory than, you know, something like these layer twos and threes that I think could be used to work natively on top of Bitcoin. Because I still think there would always be an element of trust in that sort of world. I agree with you. I don't think there's anything I disagree with you on about Saylor. I didn't know. I hadn't heard that he might use Coinbase for his own custody. And I agree with you. Like, if I had $1 billion worth of Bitcoin myself, for anyone with a $5 wrench, I don't. I think I would probably diversify how I secured it. In general, I am a 100% self-custody guy. That's what we preach at the Bitcoin Way. I understand that Saylor's in a different league when it comes to his Bitcoin accumulation personally. It's interesting, though, because he talked about how he plans on burning his, you know, his coins when he goes, and like that's his gift to humanity. You can't do that if you're keeping your keys with a third party. I mean, maybe in some technical or legal sense, they're not supposed to ever use that because you died and you didn't tell them what to do with it. But the keys are still there. And eventually the government's going to come and confiscate it, or, you know, someone's going to take it or, you know, there's going to be a hack or something. I think the only way that you can really burn your keys to begin with, for that to be a fully truthful statement, is you're in self-custody, you die, and no one else knows how to access it.
Yep.
So that's an interesting thing. I obviously agree with you on all of the, I think just the way his talk track has changed. I think what I've always given him credit for, and I don't know how you feel about this. I wonder at times if, you know, he operates an SEC regulated entity. He's, you know, rubbing shoulders with politicians and people. And if like he has to kind of walk this fine line, you and I can, it's easy for you and I to get on a podcast and say whatever the hell we want, right?
Right.
And for him to think like, how do I tactically, you know, and tactfully approach this topic without threatening the dollar that these people wield as their supreme source of power, but still, you know, have my message heard and maybe make some headway. when the moment he attacked the paranoid crypto anarchists was the moment I felt like, I think he just lost the plot on what Bitcoin is and what it can be for humanity. Do you agree with that sentiment, or maybe any nuance that you'd approach it with?
No, I agree with that also. You know, he also criticized people who wanted to sell him a $10 hardware wallet or something like that.
Yeah.
You know, and the truth is that he could divide up his wealth, his Bitcoin wealth on among however many wallets he wants. It doesn't matter. He could store all of it on one wallet and it would still functionally be there in 100 years. So I think that it's kind of foolish to say I'd rather store it with someone else who's, like you said, I don't know exactly where he holds his personal, but let's say it's at Coinbase. You know, who would you rather trust, yourself or an entity that you have to reach by phone or text message? Like, I'm going to trust myself 10 times out of 10 over anyone else. And I think you also have to be an adult and say, if I lose it or throw away my laptop in the dump, that's my fault and I have to suffer the consequences. So I think that if you were really worried about losing your stack, there's plenty of other places where you could go. You could have it insured with AnchorWatch. The solutions are there. I think it's really about your frame of mind. And I agree with you that he is kind of, let's say, cozy with the state. And as a Bitcoiner, I don't envision us having a state forever. I'm patriotic. I love America, but we have too much government, as we've learned over the last 3 months with Doge and everything they're doing. You know, government steals from you and then does whatever they want. In some cases, they do it and they hurt you by their actions. So I'm not excited about the state getting bigger and Bitcoin enforcing the state and all of its priorities, because I feel like that is very contrary to the individual. I would imagine a world in the future where we can freely transact. Let's say it's a layer two, like the Lightning Network, which is very cheap and is instantaneous. It settles on the layer one. And we are allowed to engage in commerce the way we see fit, where we provide services and projects or products to each other. And that's all transacted in Bitcoin. To me, a Bitcoin standard means that what we're fighting over as a country, as a community, like, those things are going away. You know, we can solve our differences through shared interests. And I think, and shared incentives. So I think, you know, when I see Saylor kind of just embedding himself in the higher echelons of the government, there's no way that the government doesn't see Bitcoin as a threat. It absolutely is. You know, if the IRS goes away and we no longer tax Americans on their income, you know, maybe it's not as much of a threat because the government doesn't need your money like it did before. But if we are going to have a taxing economy, you know, Bitcoin is the thing that will make that very difficult. So I think that, you know, he's walking a fine line, but I don't really think he's fooling anyone. You know, I think that we're kind of seeing a new reality unfold where stable coins like Tether are causing people who are not in a better financial position compared to the US, they're taking on our debt. We're exporting our debt now through Tether. And for me, that's the antithesis of what Bitcoin offers.
Yeah, I'll tell you what, I have a really hard time with stable coins because I go back and forth on this. On one hand, I completely agree. It's a CBDC that just hasn't been activated yet. At the same time, I sympathize that I'm in a relatively fortunate position in the United States as someone who's financially stable. I am seeking a better currency and a better form of money in the form of Bitcoin. But if I were in Argentina, or no, if I were in some like truly, truly impoverished country and I couldn't afford a hardware wallet and to stack sats every week, and I'm just trying to get by, the quicker I could convert my local currency into something like a stable coin, because I don't have, you know, dollar denominated banking options, I would want to do that. And so like, I recognize that there is value in stable coins today, as they exist for certain people in certain circumstances. I don't like that we're trying to somehow embed them further into an economy that doesn't need them. You know, like if I was in an impoverished country making a dollar a day, I would give up a hell of a lot of privacy to have access to a better form of money, like a stable coin versus my local currency, right? Like it's a shitty trade-off you have to make, but it's one that I think many people would in a desperate situation. I'm concerned about, and maybe we could talk about the Genius Act and what you think. Sounds like they're trying to get some regulatory clarity on stable coins. And besides the CBDC aspect, what are your concerns with stable coins? And what do you think the angle is that the government's trying to approach them with?
Yeah, I think it's just, for me, I think it's really simple. The more stable coins, the more opportunities for the users or for the exchange offering the stable coin to purchase U.S. treasuries. So, you know, when anyone deposits whatever currency on Tether, you know, Tether buys a dollar of U.S. treasuries to back up the deposit from the person. And then they charge fees on the transaction, which they use to purchase Bitcoin. So, you know, Tether has this, it's sort of like an evil genius model, in my opinion. You're exploiting someone, like you said. Let's just pick Haiti. Let's say a guy lives in Haiti, makes a dollar a day. He doesn't have the luxury of caring about his privacy. He just wants to be able to buy whatever he needs. And that's probably food, right? Or shelter or water or clothing. He wants basics. So he is using stablecoin and he's transferring his Haitian dollar into a Tether. And then he goes to the store and buys with Tether, you know, but every time he does that, he's also purchasing U.S. debt. And Tether sits on $150 billion of U.S. debt, one of the largest debt holders. So I think that Congress is looking at this as, hey, we can spend a lot more money if we allow more of these stablecoin companies to purchase our debt. We have essentially a blank check forever. And to me, it's hard to say it's anything but immoral. We are creating money out of thin air. It's an air token. It's being, you know, pushed onto people who don't have an alternative because their government is so poor, and the people issuing it get the benefit of buying Bitcoin. Like this is like it's only good for the token issuer, and it's good for the government, who can continue spending as much as they want. So I look at it as sort of like the nightmare scenario. It's not what I think a Bitcoiner wants. What I would say we want is a peer-to-peer electronic cash system. It's decentralized. Once you own it, you're sovereign. No one can stop you. And the frustrating part right now is we've been talking to ourselves for 3 or 4 years and doing our best to get people to stop focusing on number go up. But that's really the only thing that people are interested in, you know? I think if Bitcoin hit 500,000 tomorrow, you would see a ton of people wanting to purchase it because they're afraid of missing out. But also they're thinking it's going to go from 500 to 750 to a million in short order, which is why, again, I think we're in for like a long and grueling march to those numbers. I think we'll get there. But I think, unfortunately, it's going to be a lot of gigantic players that come into the space and quietly scoop up the supply out from underneath the people who should be buying it.
And you just reframed the stablecoin argument for me really well. I think there's a moral imperative around it. And because Tether or any number of stablecoin issuers who could be spun up tomorrow are effectively buying debt that just shouldn't ever be issued, we're extending the lifeline, which I sort of I understand that practically, but I think philosophically what it is pretty evil underlying it. It's a tricky thing because I think the United States, like the best thing they could do, like, you know, for their constituents, for us as American citizens, is to rein in spending,
Right.
Because it really, I hear this a lot of times. We have a debt problem. We have a spending problem. And that's really it. And Doge is not going to cut they're not going to close a $2 trillion deficit, right? They're going to, you know, best case, maybe they close $1 trillion of that or something. And we're still spending like drunken sailors. And, you know, we at some point, and I talked to Larry Lepard about this on the podcast recently. The best case scenario would be someone with like the willpower and no political allegiances comes in and says, we can either keep kicking the can and it's going to really be ugly, or we can migrate to a Bitcoin standard, hell, even a gold standard, but a real gold standard, which has all the flaws, obviously, that we know. So we're going to migrate to a Bitcoin standard, and it's going to be messy. It's going to be ugly, but it's going to be a hell of a lot less ugly than if we did this 20 years from now, you know? And I think you're raising an interesting point that really what the stable coins do as a market is they just extend that runway and the mess becomes bigger. And also there's nothing to say that the demand from the stable coin issuers doesn't dry up on some level, because, you know, like, yeah, they're taking out short-term debt or they're buying short-term debt rather, and earning, basically printing money. But at some point you realize that all that debt that you hold is not worth anything, right? Like that the dollars that you get are going to be devalued, which is why they're so smart to buy Bitcoin with all of their cash flows. Right.
Well, that's exactly what they're doing. I think that Tether, and I'm just guessing here, but I think secretly they know that the treasuries they hold are going to be worth a lot less than the Bitcoin they hold. But by buying the treasuries, they've essentially gotten a free pass to operate their business. You know, no one is going to stop them from buying treasuries. The government loves this. You know, you're going to buy my garbage debt that I was never going to pay off. And then it's like Rumpelstiltskin. You're going to turn that garbage, that hay, into gold, into Bitcoin. Like, it is, you know, I wish that I had created Tether. Not really, but like, it's such a genius strategy that on some level you have to say, okay, well, you know, I respect that. It's immoral, I think, in my opinion. I wouldn't do it, but I can see how they're so successful, and kudos to them. You know, it's great, but it's probably not the type of great that you want to be known for.
Yeah.
And I do think that Congress is going to sort of open the floodgates. And the way they probably think about it is, hey, you know, we have 30,000 crypto coins, meme coins. What if those were all soaking up our U.S. treasuries, our debt, instead of, you know, dumping on retail and providing a meme coin for retail? And I think that that's sort of the joke. It's like, we can continue what we're doing unabated in perpetuity, and we can use the profits to buy Bitcoin. So, I mean, when you get down to it, like, it's a pretty ugly situation, because the alternative that we could have is so much better and so much brighter.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
It's a shame. I don't really have an answer for it, other than I wish it was different.
I completely agree with you on that. We've been dancing around it. Let's talk about the strategic Bitcoin reserve. I told you before we started recording, and anyone who's paid any attention to this channel would know, I don't like it. I thought the point was separate government and money. I told you, though, I heard Pierre Richard talking about why he supports it. And I wouldn't do it justice exactly, but, you know, even as a hardcore libertarian like he is, engaging with in the political process to try to bring about the bright orange future in the way that it might practically need to come about, and maybe for things to be messier if we the people own some Bitcoin in the form of a government Bitcoin reserve. I'm still not sold, because I just, like, we've had gold sitting in the vault for forever too, you know, a form of sound money, and that has done nothing. And I'm worried that the strategic reserve is going to not only sit as digital gold exclusively, which I think is a useful analogy when you're getting people on board at times, but it's not the end of the story, obviously, when it comes to Bitcoin. And I'm concerned that people are going to buy Bitcoin and just sit on it, let it go up in value, and the money printer is just going to keep going, because we're not, the U.S. government isn't using Bitcoin to purchase firearms and munitions and the things that we, you know, are required for the forever wars that we claim as Bitcoiners we want to end. And if it's not that medium of exchange, if it's not a unit of account at any point in the future, it's not quite clear to me what we've won, except for a handful of us maybe being wealthier because, you know, number go up still to some degree. I don't know. Why don't you just give your Bitcoin reserve thesis?
My thesis. I think it's a net neutral. And the reason is, you know, the government takes huge swaths of land and they say this is a national park and you can go drive there and you can enjoy it. And they're not going to develop it and use it for commercial purposes. And as much as I don't want the state to own land in our country, I also see the benefit of having it be saved for the next generation. You know, and I think that we are very black and white when it comes to Bitcoin, and we are very resistant to things living with tension. And to me, the SBR is pure tension because it has a lot of negative aspects to it. You know, the government doesn't need to buy Bitcoin. It can print money. As Bitcoiners, we really don't want the state to get more powerful, which is what Bitcoin will make it do. And we also don't know if the government is going to buy spot Bitcoin or buy it from exchanges or how they're going to hold it or if there's going to be a Bitcoin office and is that elected? So an elected position. So like how we think about Bitcoin on a national scale, I think is a complete chaotic problem. And I could see the U.S. losing its Bitcoin or selling its Bitcoin under an administration that isn't as favorable to Bitcoin. You know, similar to we've watched the U.S. Marshals sell 195,000 Bitcoin, and it looks to me like they might have sold the other 200,000 as well before Trump took office, which if that is the case, and we've, you know, as our, you know, we see that none of that Bitcoin is part of our potential reserve, that would be quite shocking. So I think that there's a ton of reasons why we shouldn't be excited about it, and it runs contrary. But I also think that if the United States buys Bitcoin, and let's just say they buy a million and they buy 200,000 every year for the next 5 years, you have consistent demand, you have consistent Bitcoin in the news, and it might be the only thing that gets your neighbor or your buddy at work to buy, you know, his allotment of Bitcoin. And if you took the entire 21 million supply, there's like 224,000 sats per person on the planet. And if you buy, let's just say $800, you get your 0.01, you know, you're far better off than most of the world once all, you know, let's say 10, 15 years. So I see it as a catalyst that could fuel adoption, which at the end of the day should be our number one goal. We want more people using Bitcoin. But you know, they also take a lot off the table. And if the U.S. buys it, they'll hold it for 20 years. So I think that they'll reduce a ton of volatility, you know, once they start buying. We'll see huge price spikes and then I think a plateau. So,
yeah,
you know, I just see it as a neutral. I don't have like a strong position either way. I feel like it's inevitable. There's nothing I can do personally to stop it. The only thing I can hope for is maybe that clueless guy I work with will finally buy a little Bitcoin, and in 4 or 5 years, he'll be grateful that he did.
Yeah. My other concern with it is that they've talked about using it. I think the Bitcoin Act lays it out. I haven't looked at it in a few weeks, but it would be used for paying down the national debt.
Yeah.
Which on one hand sounds really good. On the other hand, if they pay down the national debt and they still have a money printer and they can still vote to, you know, raise the debt ceiling every 6 months or however often they do that, I don't pay attention to that either. We're going to be back up to $36 trillion in debt again in no time. You know, yeah. I mean, it only took us, what were we like? We were in like the single digit trillions or maybe tens or something in 08. And now we're at 36, you know? And so I feel like it could give a green light to government to continue the irresponsibility. And what we've done is we've really kicked the can down the road, because now we don't have a sovereign debt crisis, but we have the exact same problem and these same inflationary forces that are impacting people all over the world. I don't know that that magically makes the problem go away. Like, the only solution is an actual Bitcoin standard, really. And I just don't know to what extent these things really foster that in, except, you know, maybe like your neighbor, your friend, someone who's been sort of, you know, dragging their feet on it, maybe goes and buys some because if the government's adopting it, maybe I should have a little bit or whatever. But who knows at what price they're going to be getting in. It's probably not $80,000 if that were to be the case, because everyone would have woken up by then to needing some Bitcoin.
Yeah.
I don't know.
I imagine a future where, let's say, your employer still pays you in dollars and you get $100. That $100, you take it and you get 100 sats. You know, one for one. $1 is one sat. Now, that makes Bitcoin $100 million for one full coin, but I think that's where we're going to go in enough time. I think that, you know, the government, let's say they sell their Bitcoin to pay off their debt, is that going to be done in a responsible manner? Or is the value of Bitcoin going to drop precipitously as they're paying down debt? You know, I mean, like, what are we talking about here? Is it going to go in phases? So I think there are a lot of questions, and it's not easy to just paint it with a broad brush like the Bitcoin Act does and say, we'll use it to pay down our debt. Like, okay, well, what method? What's the frequency? Will the market be able to absorb $18 trillion in Bitcoin sales in 20 years from now, you know, in 2065, when we want to pay off half of our debt at that point?
A lot of sell pressure.
So, I mean, I'm sure that there are ways that they could do it. But if America buys Bitcoin, it's now in the boat with us. And it also cares about number go up. And it also doesn't want to disrupt the market. So I don't know. We talk about game theory all the time. But I just don't think it's as cut and dried as we want it to be. I think it's like a slow grind, like an iceberg. And by the time it's all done, we're going to be, you know, ground into fine powder.
Yeah. You know, a lot of people are going to lose their minds along the way, I have a feeling. A lot of, what'd you call it? Like they're going to be quitting, opting out.
Yeah. The
yeah. Because it's not doing well. Yeah. No, you have a comment on that?
Yeah. I think that, Bitcoin's, you know, the most fun and the most painful thing I think I've ever been involved with. You know, I got in 2021 and I was losing sleep because I wanted to get a certain amount, and it was going from like 30 to 40 to 50 and then crashing down. So I held all through that, you know, and I looked like an idiot at home. You know, I bought at six, my highest purchase was like at 64, and then, you know, plummets down to 16. And, I bought some at 17. I didn't get the wick down to 16, but it's been painful. You know, I look back and remember the points of my life where I ignored Bitcoin, and I kicked myself, because I think we are in a new paradigm, bigger players, less volatility. The news doesn't move the Bitcoin price. And I think everyone is secretly stacking, and one day the music will stop. There won't be as much Bitcoin as we thought. And I think that's when we're finally going to see the numbers that Samson and everyone talks about. But I think it's going to be like a hockey stick, boring, boring, boring for the next certain amount of time. And then one day you wake up and you have to like rub your eyes because you don't believe what you're seeing.
Yeah. And I agree with you. I think that could be a long, like, I think we'll probably have a slow grind up, but it'll feel like the bottom of a hockey stick. And then, yeah, I think at some point, like, we'll be full on all the game theory, everything we talk about. Like, I think eventually that day comes. But I think people need to brace themselves for, you know, 10 years, 20 years. I don't know. Like, it's, but you just have to remember, like, the only reason you looked stupid to your friends and family when Bitcoin was dropping is because they thought that you were buying like NASDAQ shares and you picked the wrong, you know, or something like that, and you picked the wrong company. They didn't realize what you're doing is buying the future of money, and people are volatile. And so you're going to have, companies rehypothecating paper Bitcoin. You're going to have people dump because they get scared because they don't understand what it is that they're holding. And that's just, that's just the reality, you know? And that's part of the reason I think it's so important that people really begin to internalize, like, what problem is Bitcoin solving? Because when you really understand sort of the mechanics of the Ponzi in which we find ourselves, and you understand that there's no easy, smooth road out of this mess, then the case for Bitcoin becomes very clear. But as long as you're just looking at a Bitcoin ticker on, you know, CNBC or something like that, that's always going to sort of evade your comprehension. So it's unfortunate, but yeah, well, it'll be fun to revisit this episode in a few years and see if we've hit that point, or maybe we've got a lot longer. I don't know. Last question I wanted to go over with you. I got to ask the unpopular opinion at the end. But I think you've sort of indicated this. You believe that we will one day reach a point of hyper Bitcoinization where you go to anyone globally, you go to the grocery store, you pay in sats. It's your food is denominated in sats. You buy a house, it's denominated in sats. Is that like a future that if you were to just bet on it, that's what you think is going to happen?
Yeah, I do think you'll have a choice though. I think you'll have one price for dollars, and I think you'll have a lower price for sats. So I think that we're going to get used to like having a loyalty card at the grocery store. You use the loyalty card, you save on this item. I think purchasing in Bitcoin is going to be the thing that everyone wants. Every retailer is going to want you to buy their product in Bitcoin. They're going to take dollars because I don't think we're going to escape the two currency system for some time. And I don't think the system is going to collapse because of stablecoins. So I think we will be going now into you can buy it in Bitcoin or you can buy it in cash or dollars or Tether, whatever the marketing ends up being. And I think hyper Bitcoinization is when you're not able to transact unless or buy the thing you want unless you can purchase it in Bitcoin. And then what I imagine happening is everyone saying, well, I have to buy a little Bitcoin because my kid wants those sneakers and I can only afford them if I pay in Bitcoin. Now, you'll still see a lot of people hoarding as much Bitcoin as possible because the value continues to increase. But at that point, I think it's a savings account, but it's also a better money. It buys me more stuff at lower prices. And I think that it'll be complicated, but I think that's the future that we'll see. I could see that happening, you know, this decade. You know, there are many states that let you pay your taxes in Bitcoin. Some offer, you know, Colorado, you could pay in crypto, whatever that is. But I think the states will gladly accept your Bitcoin instead of taking your dollars. And that to me is like, it's a top-down shift. It'll start with the luxury brands, and then it'll start with the big purchases like homes, cars, all the way down to, you know, designer stuff. And then ultimately, you know, at some point after, everyday items.
Awesome, man. I hope so. I think when we reach that point, and if we have that happen in the next decade, I think it's kind of contingent upon how messy the macroeconomic picture looks over in the coming years. Because I think many of us think the big print is coming, but you know the gold bug types who have been calling for the collapse have been calling for the collapse for 50 years, and they seem to always have another trick up their sleeve, and you know, things get ugly, but not ugly enough for like fundamental change, it seems. I've still always felt like, and I've probably just beating a dead horse with this comment for anyone listening, but I felt like really what it's going to take is for like a Max Payne scenario where people in the lower rungs of the economic ladder simply cannot afford to feed their families. Because inflation has run too hot. And I think it's already a huge strain on a lot more people than most of us realize. If you're not in that group who's looking at your bank account every day, wondering how you're going to get to next month, it's easy to assume that everyone else is kind of living like you. And my sense is a lot of people are living very different lives than I'm fortunate to live. And many of us in Bitcoin are fortunate to live. And so I wonder if some of that changes. It's just necessitated, you know, a migration to better money, because otherwise you as a politician are looking at the guillotine, you know, because there's just not something I'm calling for, just something that, you know, you got desperate people around the country and around the world who are demanding action. So, I told you I was going to ask you this. You got a bunch of unpopular opinions. Why don't you pick one? And of course, I said you get bonus points if you offend some Bitcoiners with your unpopular opinion.
Okay. I think that you have plenty of time to stack as much Bitcoin as you need. That's what I think. I think we like to say that there's a supply shock coming. I don't think that's true. I think, Bitcoin is hard capped at 21 million. But I think if you're panicking and you're wanting to get to a certain number this year or next year or before 2028 halving, I think you should relax. And I think you should take a breath and buy Bitcoin when you're able to. And I think give yourself a break. Sure, have a target in mind. I think at the beginning of, or at the start of last halving, last April, I think I said over the next 4 years, I want to buy whatever it was, a certain amount. I still have that number in my head, but I'm not panicked on time like I used to be. And not because I've been in the market for 4 years, but just because I think there will always be Bitcoin available to buy. Someone is always going to be able to sell it, and they're going to take a portion of their stack and they're going to sell some so they can purchase whatever they need. And then I'll be able to buy a fraction of that. So I think, it's unpopular. We like to think that buy all the Bitcoin now because it's going to be a million and then you won't be able to get any. I don't think that's happening anytime soon. So I think you should just relax and buy Bitcoin when you have money, and don't sweat it if you don't.
I think that's great advice. And I hope you're right, because there are a lot of people in my life that I'd like to onboard who still haven't quite gotten there yet. So hopefully they've got plenty of time over the next few years to do that. And I've got time to orange pill them.
Yeah. I mean, if Bitcoin went to like 10 million, let's just say it goes to 100 million, I guarantee you that I'm going to have to give away some of my Bitcoin to the people that I know and love and care about, because they have no option to get any sats. That's what happens. If Bitcoin's price goes up too quickly, the people you love and care about won't be able to have any. I mean, do we want that? Sometimes yes, because they thought we were stupid. But, I've made purchases and set that aside for someone else that I love and care about. This is for you the day that you need Bitcoin. I have it.
Yep. Yeah, I've done the same thing for a couple of people, and I think it's a good thing to do. So for Bitcoiners out there listening, figure out a way to onboard your friends and family without them even knowing. If you can, you have the means to do that. Greer, this has been a blast, man. I love your contrarian takes. I think they're rooted in some sound logic, and I tend to be a contrarian anyway, and so I have to like really measure myself to make sure I'm not just being a contrarian to be a contrarian. So I think you make a lot of sense, man. Why don't you give everyone a handoff, tell them where they can find you, and anything else you'd want to point them to.
Yeah, sure. Yeah. Thanks for having me. It's been fun. My Twitter handle, X handle, is Birdflip, and I sell, Bitcoin, the Birdflip bird at shopbirdflip.com. So sort of the GFY middle finger. Bitcoin is FU money. And this is the FU shirt. You can pick up a hat that looks similar.
Awesome, man. Love it. Thank you so much for the time. It's been an absolute pleasure.
Yeah, man. I appreciate it. All right. Great.
Cheers, brother. And that's a wrap. Again, I hope you enjoyed this conversation with Greer. Make sure you follow him on X and check out Birdflip, his brand. And do me a favor, if you're enjoying this channel, go like and subscribe, comment, do something to feed the algorithm. We'd really, really appreciate that. It would mean a lot. And of course, if you need help getting your Bitcoin into proper 100% self-custody, go to thebitcoinway.com/podcast. We can help you do it the right way the first time, no counterparty risk. We also help with online privacy, setting up privacy phones, and we have a Plan B residency option as well. Everything you need for a self-sovereign life. Again, that's thebitcoinway.com/podcast. Until next time, stay safe, stay sovereign, and remember, the yield on Bitcoin is freedom.